tell you, I cannot remember the last time that a book had more buzz in the evangelical world than Jim Belcher's Deep Church. We have talked with Jim Belcher twice now on this program. He pastors Redeemer Presbyterian Church in someplace in Southern California. You would think that I would remember that, but it'll come to me eventually. Everybody is talking about this book. We've interviewed Jim twice and haven't even skimmed the surface. And finally, my friends over at Team Pyro, the Pyromaniacs blog, where guys like Phil Johnson, who basically is the editor of John MacArthur's works, and Frank Turk, some other guys, they're opine on a daily basis on, Phil Johnson, Dan Phillips, Frank Turk, and I have no idea who this Peccadillo guy is, but Frank Turk joins me now. Frank, it's great to have you. Who's Peccadillo?
Oh, that's a Jonathan Johnson. It's actually Phil's son.
Oh, okay. So he's smart enough to use a pseudonym.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I used to use a pseudonym until I felt like it was disreputable, so I went to my real name.
We're so glad that you did. It's an honor to welcome you back here to the program for the second time. You do remember the first time, don't you?
I do. It was such a great time, Paul. I think it was almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably been 3 years ago. That's. It's not that you made a bad impression on me. It's just that you're never available.
I'm not. Unlike these other guys who are all pastors and real writers, you know, I have a real job, so I have to honor my employer most days.
Yes,
so.
These guys like me that just work one day a week and golf the rest.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying.
I'm trying to figure out how, though, you found time to actually write a review of Jim Belcher's book.
Well, you know, the truth is the review I was writing got stolen by Kevin DeYoung. When I posted 2 weeks ago, the short long version of the story is that I found out that Jim was a Facebook friend of mine, and I emailed him and I said, well, you know, I heard your interview on the White Horse Inn, really interested in your book, would like to review it for the website. So he sent me a copy of the book. He was very kind to do that. And, I started reading it and it was extremely, you know, it's a book that I think if you read it well, it engages you at a place where you have to say, well, gosh, you know, that is something that I do. And gosh, I think that's not where we really want to be. I mean, it's a book that really, without being a controversialist book, tends to churn up the controversies that we have inside ourselves about, especially in this case, about the church. But I posted my initial recommendation that everybody read the book because, you know, you can post a review and people just kind of pile on, and that's not what I wanted to have happen as people thought about this book. I wanted them to have read the book and to have thought about it so that we could have an intelligent discussion because this is a very intelligent book.
Kevin DeYoung, of course, pastoring up in East Lansing, just up the street from where I'm sitting here.
And, exactly. But Kevin stole my review. That was the point of my story. Kevin stole my review. That was the review I was writing. And then I pop open his website, and there it is. And I'm like, well, what am I going to say now?
Well, I'll tell you, that review came out the day I last interviewed Jim Belcher. And I thought, why didn't I see all this stuff when I read Jim's book? I mean, Kevin basically wrote another book in response to Jim's book. That has got to be the longest book review I've ever read in my life.
You obviously don't read book reviews at Challies, then.
Well, Challies, yeah, I occasionally, I have to actually read the books of the authors I'm interviewing, so it's very difficult. I quite honestly, I don't read book reviews, but my nephew had sent me Kevin DeYoung's because he knew I was interviewing Jim. On the book, but the problem is I didn't get his tweet, his direct message to me until the middle of the show, and I wasn't able to read Kevin's review of Jim's book. But if you had to, you know, if somebody's tuning in to the Paul Edwards program for the first time here, Frank, and they don't have a clue what we're talking about, when we talk about this book, Deep Church, in a sentence or two, how would you characterize what Jim is trying to say?
I think if I had to say, I'm glad you asked that. I think what Jim is trying to say is that there's something wrong with the church. There are fair criticisms of it, and there are constructive and faithful solutions to those criticisms. I think that if I had to summarize Jim's book, those would be the three sentences I would use. But Jim treads the minefield, you know, between what he calls the traditional church and what he calls the emerging church, and it is a minefield. You know, we have been actually lobbing grenades into that minefield for a long time at the Team Pyro. But the truth of the matter is that it is that there are questions that both sides are asking about the state of the English speaking church, particularly. And the what you find out is what people really think about theology by the kinds of answers they produce.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Jim's book tries to find, he says it's the third way. I think he's just trying to find a faithful way to answer the questions that are being asked.
Frank Turk, my guest, he's one of the pyromaniacs out there at the Team Pyro blog. Teampyro.blogspot.com is where you will find Frank Turk's review of Deep Church, A Third Way Beyond Emerging and Traditional. And you know, Frank, the Christian thing to do is never, ever, ever talk about a brother behind his back. And so I'm going to ask Jim Belcher right now. Jim, what do you think of what Frank's saying about you?
I'm just, you know, I do. I have a day job, too. It's pastoring. And believe it or not, I had just gotten back from a lunch when I saw your tweet. And I thought, wow, social networking is pretty amazing.
Yes, it is.
I would join. And Frank, as Frank said, Frank and I are Facebook buddies. So, no, what I wanted to say is first is that, gosh, Frank is as articulate on the radio as his writing is, and I really appreciated his review. The thing that I want, and I thought he summarized it so well what I was trying to say. But what I really want, and I think it's happening, is I don't want everybody to kind of have the kumbaya moment. Oh, this is all great. We all love each other. I want us to really have serious dialogue, which I think is happening. But the only thing I ask is that we really do it in a way that we're listening to each other and taking each other's sides or ideas seriously. And I'm so excited that that's happening. And I said on my tweet this morning that this was the blog review I feared the most. It's the one that I knew was coming. I had the most trepidation over. But I think once I read it, and then Kevin DeYoung's outstanding review, I really realized, hey, we've opened up an opportunity here to dialogue. And Frank is right. I mean, I'm trying to faithfully respond to the dialogue that's out there and the problems of the church that are out there in a way that moves us forward together as much as possible. I know not everybody's going to be able to move forward together, but I'm trying to move as much of the evangelical church together into mission and into faithfulness as we can.
You know, Frank, when I read your review, I kind of gather that you have some reservations about Deep Church, maybe because you feel like Jim may be giving too much to the emerging crowd, Brian McLaren, maybe not going after him hard enough, maybe in the same way that I didn't go after Benny Hinn hard enough yesterday.
Yeah, first of all, Paul, I would like to say that you had Benny on before you had me on, so that speaks a lot to our relationship.
We had to clear the demons out of the studio.
But, you know, what I don't want to do, I mean, honestly, I think that in a year, I would love to have an open conversation with Jim with what I think are the real concerns that I would have about that book. Because to have that discussion now detracts from what I think are the real benefits of that book. You know, like I said, I think he gives a lot of slack to the folks who are on the emerging / emergent side of the conversation. But I think the thing that really comes of that is that at the end, when he has said, okay, this is actually their position. I mean, you know, Jim actually, I think, did a lot of soul suffering to look at these people who he considers friends and in some respect has considered brothers in the past, and has said, well, they're really wrong, deeply wrong about some things. But instead of going after them, you know, like we do at Team Pyro with the fire and the hammers, you know, he came and he said, well, listen, those things are just wrong. And if we turn to tradition and scripture, we find something that is correct, something that is actually fundamental and foundational for our faith. And, you know, that's a different approach than I would take to the situation. But I also do not come from a situation where I have sort of sweated with some of these people and bled with some of these people in the field of trying to to bring some kind of reform to the church. So I respect Jim's position there, and I would really rather not talk about the things that I think are shortcomings of this book, because there are so many good benefits of this book.
What are the good benefits?
Well, I think the first thing is that there is a faithful solution to the problems that, I mean, you know, one of the things, I think the three of us really would all agree on one thing, that, and that is that first thesis, that there is something wrong, especially with the English-speaking church. There is something wrong with what we see as the gospel and faithfulness and the way we live in community. There is something wrong with it. So, Jim, I think Jim does a great job of identifying those questions. Now, you know, is it always the question that we want to ask? You know, I mean, everybody, you know, everybody would want to pile on, Rick Warren for being too fuzzy and warm, or pile on to somebody else who is essentially somebody who falls inside of orthodoxy but doesn't really deliver the powerful John Piper-esque sermons that we would all love to deliver. But I think that Jim goes to the fact that you know, you have to live every day.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find a way to do church that works every day. And that was one of the things that I thought was really powerful with the way he wrapped up the book, was that, okay, these are the things that I say are deep church. Now, what does it mean to live as a deep church? Well, it means to reach out to people who may even think that they're saved. And when they're in their worst moment, show them that we love them the way Christ loves them, so that their families can be redeemed and their lives can be redeemed and their faith can be redeemed, that it doesn't have to be this stagnant, stale faith, but it can, in fact, be something that all of a sudden turns to Christ and sees his beauty and our need for him, and we fall on our faces before him.
Frank Turk, my guest, he blogs with Phil Johnson and some other guys at teampyro.blogspot.com. He has just released his review of Jim Belcher's book, Deep Church, and you can get information about Deep Church at www.thedeepchurch.com. Jim, what of what Frank has been saying, about the identification that something is deeply wrong with the church? As evangelicals, we all agree about that. However, I think as evangelicals coming from different either emerging or traditional, we would disagree to the answer to what the answer to the problem is. And do you think maybe, and again, I agree with Frank, I don't want to diminish and discourage anybody from reading your book. It is probably going to become the definitive word, at least for the time being, on the emerging versus traditional debate. And I don't want to diminish from that, and I don't want to discourage people from getting it. On the contrary, I want people to get this book and read it. But could you have been harder on the emergence than maybe you were?
Well, yeah, this is great question. You know, I love the way I'm really liking Frank more and more. So this is,
you see, Jim, when people meet me, they like me. That's just the way it is.
You're making it so hard. He's so right. I mean, I think there's no question that I think both sides recognize there's something wrong with the church. Where we differ is what the solution is. I mean, even the cover story on Christianity Today this month was asking the same thing. We know something's wrong with the church. What I wanted to do is take the emerging side of the equation seriously, because they have been raising the problems. Now, some of us, we may not agree with their solutions, but the first thing I want to do is to affirm kind of the questions they're raising. I wanted to affirm the fact that, hey, there's a lot of common ground here on what we see is wrong with the church. Let's at least recognize that. And, you know, the question, was I too easy on them? Was I, you know, the hardest thing is when you're actually in fellowship and you're friends with people and you know, you know, the first rule is I wanted them to recognize my summary of their position and say, yes, that's what I believe, even if they disagree with my criticism. And I think we owe that to one another, so that they recognize the kind of the summary of it. But I also realize that, you know, when you work with these folks, and I've cut my teeth kind of in the broad evangelical world and worked alongside of these people, is they really do have a heart for the church and they have a heart for the gospel. And even when we were differing, I had to recognize that. Now, I'd also say, though, that as I got into the book was a process of over 3 years, that some of the guys that I wrote about continued to shift their positions, and you know, I might have come out a little differently if I was writing the book today in some of their positions. But I felt at the time I wanted to be fair, so that as fair as I could be, so that they would hear me, because I not only want to impact the broad middle, but I was trying to get both the traditional and the emerging side to also learn a little bit in the process. And you don't get people to learn unless they're listening.
Can you both can you both hang through the break?
Yeah, would love to.
Yeah, because I think the poster child for the division between traditional and emerging has got to be, and this just may be because of where I happen to be located in space and time, but for me, it's got to be Rob Bell. And I want to get both of your perspectives on Rob Bell, particularly that Boston Globe interview he did last week. And maybe if we can get Rob Bell straightened out, we can solve this whole problem. And we'll continue our conversation with Frank Turk from the Team Pyro blog, teampyro.blogspot.com. And Jim Belcher, author of Deep Church, www.thedeepchurch.com. I want to invite you to join me at the end of the month, October 30th and 31st, for the second annual God and Culture Conference. It'll take place at my church, Calvary Baptist Church in Waterford, Friday night, all day Saturday. Don Kistler, who is an expert, as far as I'm concerned, a scholar on the Puritans, going to join us to talk about contentment in a discontented world, really zeroing in on Jeremiah Burroughs' great work, The Rare Jewel of Christian Contentment. We need this message in the city of Detroit in southeastern Michigan, given where we are with the economy, so that our treasure is Jesus and our treasure is not our treasure. And you can learn all about the conference at the website, www.godandculture.com. Just click the conference banner that you'll see there and plan to join us at the end of the month, October 30th and 31st, for an evening and a day of getting into the Word to talk about contentment. My guest, Jim Belcher, author of one of the most talked about books in evangelicalism right now, Deep Church, A Third Way Beyond Emerging and Traditional. And that book can be found at www.thedeepchurch.com. And Frank Turk, one of the pyromaniacs at teampyro.blogspot.com, who's just published his review of Jim's book. Rob Bell pastors a church up the street here in Grand Rapids. He did an interview with Michael Paulson at the Boston Globe last week, just a Q&A, which the Globe reprinted. And I'll tell you, Frank, Phil Johnson came down with both feet on top of Rob Bell when he redefined evangelicalism as a belief that we together can actually work for change in the world, caring for the environment, extending to the poor generosity and kindness, a hopeful outlook. That's a beautiful sort of thing, Rob Bell told Michael Paulson. No cross, no gospel, no self-denial, no atonement, nothing that John Calvin or the great original evangelical reformers would recognize as evangelical. Does this, Frank, do for you what it does for me and really define the chasm that is between us on some of these issues between emerging and traditional?
Well, I think it's got to do that for anybody who really, and I don't even think it's between emerging and traditional at this point, Paul. I mean, that definition of quote unquote evangelical, it doesn't even go to Jim's Deep Church definition of, you know, the mere Christianity definition mm-hmm. of adhering to the three creeds. I mean, the creeds are so, for as early as they occur in the history of the church, they are so robust for that period. And given the real, you know, hierarchy of church that existed at that point, for something like the Apostles' Creed to be manifest that early, it just reflects on where Rob has come from and where he is going. Now, I've never met Rob Bell. You know, I have seen videos of him at different CBA events. I have been exposed to places where he is standing up for certain things. But I agree with you. You know, the word Jesus is not a word that he frequently uses to talk about somebody who could judge you or save you. The idea of sin as something that offends God doesn't ever appear in his vocabulary. And the idea that God did something in the world in history doesn't often come up. I mean, it's troubling, I think.
Jim, how do you respond to Rob's definition of evangelicalism?
Yeah, I read it right pretty soon after it came out, you know, and as I point out in the book, Rob is an old friend. I don't deal with him extensively in the book because he's kind of a little bit derivative. I don't mean that in a bad way, as far as he's taken from Brian McLaren and some of the other first thinkers in the emerging movement. But Rob endorsed the Deep Church book, and the first thing is, it's so hard to know. I mean, it's like the rule in politics: be careful who you're being quoted by and what you're saying. He seems to be trying to rehabilitate kind of the Christian right view that we're all mean and nasty and we don't care about anything but saving souls. And so if he's just trying to balance it, there's some truth to the fact that the evangelicals should care about the things that he mentioned. So I don't struggle with that. The difficulty is it's in what's missing, and did he want what's missing to be missing? In other words, does he not see evangelicalism as being about Jesus and the cross and sin and atonement and those sorts of things? And if he does, that's problematic. I don't think that's the case. I don't think people who know him well and listen to his sermons would say that's the case. So that's kind of there's an omission going on where he should have probably put all of that in. I hope that's not the trajectory of where he's going, that would be a great thing to get him to respond to. Mm-hmm. But as far as just a technical definition of what evangelicalism is, I mean, he was trying to redefine it in a positive way, but that's not even historically accurate. But I'm not sure that's what he was asking. So Frank was right as far as what would a historical definition be, and he didn't necessarily give that, but I'm not sure he was trying to either.
When we first talked, Jim, a couple of weeks ago about your book, you're saying the common ground between emerging and traditional has got to be the historic Orthodox creeds, and yet I pointed out to you that we probably while we might agree on some of the elements of the creeds, emerging and traditional can't agree on atonement. Brian McLaren's called for a 5-year moratorium on the debate over homosexuality to wait to see what the Holy Spirit says. And I say 1 Corinthians 6 is pretty clear. So, I mean, is this a bridge too far?
I hope not. I mean, you know, and one of the things that I made clear to you, Paul, when we last talked was that it's not a lowest common denominator so that everybody can fit in. I mean, the creeds still are boundary markers. The great tradition is a boundary marker. But I'm saying there's a whole lot of room in here for traditionalists and a lot of people in the emerging and traditional sides to fit in. But it doesn't mean everybody's going to fit into the great tradition. And I think I make that clear in the book. As generous as I try to be to the people I disagree with, there's still going to be some people who have self-selected themselves outside of the great tradition or mere Christianity. And I try and make that clear without it looking like I'm the bad guy who's kicking them out.
Frank, John MacArthur says, we don't converse with heretics, we condemn them. Is that too harsh?
No, I don't think it is. I mean, especially in the context that he says that, you know, he's not trying. What he's trying to say there is that we don't open the door on closed issues. And I think that that's exactly the right attitude to take. But at the same time, you know, does that, you know, I'm also, you know, if you, I don't know how much you follow my blogging, Paul, but you know, one of the things that I have said pretty recently is that, you know, a lot of apologetics, a so-called apologetics, it goes way overboard there. I mean, I think there is an apologetic impetus that is necessary for the church, for us to defend and to explain the things that we really do believe. And in that respect, you know, it's not really a conversation. It's what, you know, it's what Paul says to Titus and Timothy are rebukes, that we give a rebuke to those who are denying the clear statements of the faith, you know, that we give a rebuke to those who are teaching things that cause people to move to bad behavior and to false doctrine. So when Dr. MacArthur says we don't have a discussion with them, I think he's saying we don't open up closed issues. And you know, whether Jesus was actually a person and whether he lived a perfect life and whether he died for sin and was therefore raised from the dead by God to accept that atoning death, you know, those are not things that we need to open the door on again. Those are settled matters. And to open the door on those is to commit a pretty terrible error.
Jim, it seems to me that those on the emerging side who are hearing what guys like MacArthur and Carson and others are saying to them can't agree on the basis of the authority for them to say what they're saying. I may be not saying this correctly the way I want it to come out, but I think some of the emerging guys hear MacArthur when Piper criticizes things coming out of the emerging church, and they might say, well, based on what? Your interpretation of the scripture. And it seems like until we can agree where the authority lies, no amount of conversation is gonna bridge the gap.
I think that's right. I mean, I think what Frank said really characterizes, say, the revisionist side of the emerging, or what the emerging camp, but not, as I pointed out in the book, the emerging camp is a lot bigger. And there's many in the emerging camp, Paul, that would say, yeah, I agree with you, and I also agree with the same authority that you're talking about. It's the guys and gals that are probably more saying, hey, everything's up for grabs. Just because this was decided in the 4th and 5th century with creeds and the confessions, and those have held for the last 1,500 years, that doesn't mean we have to believe them now. We have to rethink those, open the door. And I think that's what John MacArthur is talking about on some of those. No, we don't. The church for the last 2,000 years has decided on these things, particularly when it comes to how an individual is saved. But so those are the ones in the emergent side of the emerging camp that are getting the most pushback. And you're right, Paul. That's the conversation we have to have about authority, because if we don't even agree on the same authority, if they're going to say, well, our authority is our community and it's not the word, and we're making the decision within community, then there's no way to hold them accountable because their community makes that decision.
Yeah, and certainly authority is when we decide on what that authority is, and I don't know that we decide. I think a sovereign God ultimately says, thus saith the Lord, I've spoken, and this is the word of the Lord. But how free are we, Frank, to shape the church in our own image under the pretense, and I don't use pretense pejoratively, I mean it in a positive kind of way, of reaching the culture and evangelism? It seems to me that much of the emerging church says, hey, we got to change the way we do things, and we can't do it Calvin's way or Luther's way. That kind of liturgy was for that time and day, and we're free to shape the church in any image we want. How free are we with Scripture as our authority to do that?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And one of the ironic moments of the book, I thought, was when Jim was at Dan Kimball's church and sort of reviewing a worship service there. And at the end of it, Jim's statement was, I was ministered to in the service, words to that effect. And I thought that was very ironic because, you know, you were there to worship God, not necessarily to be ministered to. And I think that reveals to us something of a very deep-seated, and all of us have it. You know, I don't want to come off here as holier than thou or some sort of person who has detached himself from this flaw in our version of Christianity. But, you know, we all have this thing where we think that somehow the service is meant for us. And it's not really meant for us. It's meant for us toward God. You know, the idea that we're spectators or consumers or an audience is a kind of thing that we have to get away from if we're really going to talk seriously about worship. So when we talk about reforming worship, you know, should it be from every tribe and every tongue and every nation? Sure, I think it should, and I think that there is plenty of liberty from Scripture and even from church history and the traditions we inherit to go ahead and worship as every tribe, tongue, and nation. But we have to remember that it's not for our sake that we do this. It's for God's sake. It is because of what He has already done for us that we do these things. And for us not to approach worship from a position of gratefulness, but from a position of being a consumer of some sort of commodity is always a big, it's always a big mistake.
Jim, I've got 2 minutes left. I'm giving you the last word since you're the object of all this sound and fury.
Yeah, sorry, Frank. That was a little bit of evangelical speak there. But I think I don't disagree with anything you said. I mean, I think that the common mistake we make is if we say worship is all about us, but I also think we can make a mistake and say worship is all about God. Clearly it's all about God, but at the same time, God has called us to worship Him, not only because he deserves the praise and honor, but there's something about the weekly worship that shapes, forms, edifies, ministers to us That's and I think good. We make a mistake when we just say it's all about God. Yeah, of course it is. But at the same time, when I put a worship service together, I'm thinking not only how to honor God, but how to nurture, disciple, edify, and really transform and shape through the service that comes about through the word being preached well and the sacrament being administered, you know, those sorts of things. And that's kind of what I meant. But it did kind of sound pretty, you know, consumeristic, and I certainly didn't mean that. I'll change that in the second edition.
Frank Turk and Jim Belcher, I want to say to you both sincerely, you are both gifts to the church. We need to have more conversations like this. Jim Belcher, the author of Deep Church, you can find out more about that book at www.thedeepchurch.com, and Frank Turk, blogger par excellence at teampyro.blogspot.com. And both of you need to be guests. You know, Jim, you've been a guest now three times in 2 weeks. Frank, you got a lot of catching up to do to get the ratio right.
Well, I'm going to get kicked out of the UK, so you'll invite me more often.
Yes, the next time I have Benny Hinn on, I'll have Frank Turk on to ask all the questions I'm too afraid to ask.
Oh, my.
Both of you, thank you so very much. It's been an honor chatting with both of you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Paul.
It's just about 58 minutes after the hour here on the Paul Edwards program. And coming up tomorrow, we're going to chat with a professor down there at the University of Texas at Austin. Mark Regnerus is going to join us. He wrote